Afternoon. April. It's April already. If you want to contact the programme, 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. We're starting the programme today with some really good news. You probably know Erica Fleming by now. She came to our attention because she featured in an RTE documentary called My Homeless Family last year. And that documentary showed how Erica was living in a Dublin hotel with her daughter Emily. She's been living in hotel accommodation for a total of 22 months. And Emily and Erica are one of the families who are listed as homeless in this country. Well, the good news is that Erica joins me on the line now from her new home. Congratulations. Hi, Erica.
Thanks a million.
So it sounds like an empty home.
It is. I know, it's probably very echoey, but it's four walls.
Yeah. You must be over the moon delighted.
To be honest with you, even up till this morning, I was still kind of anxious. Like, I didn't know whether this was going to happen or not, you know what I mean? Yeah. I was afraid to let myself be happy, but now I'm thrilled.
When did you actually turn the key?
Today.
What time?
11:30. I went up and signed the papers and I was here by 12.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and I've been here since.
And you've been walking around, you're going, that wall's mine, that counter's mine, that's
what
mine.
What colour will I do that? Yeah. So Emily was cleaning.
Yeah, walk us around. It's a two-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, two beds, so it's an open plan, that's what they call it.
Okay.
An open plan sitting around kitchen.
Right, and that's where you are at the moment.
I'm actually in my own bedroom.
Okay, go
at
on.
At the moment. Right. That's a double bedroom. And then I have a single bedroom for Emily and a bathroom.
Okay, and then you have the open living space.
Yeah. And I have a lovely big balcony.
Great.
And so I'll be able to fit a couple of little chairs on there, you know, so you can sit out when it's sunny.
Is there a kitchen counter?
There's a kitchen counter. Yeah. There's about five presses and then a little kitchen counter. And then I'll get my washing machine and all of that because, like, there's nothing there, do you know what I mean, at the moment. But it'll all come together.
And this is like an old tradition, when I say old traditional, I mean the sort of format. It's a Dublin City Council, sort of council house, council apartment.
Yes, right, it is, yes. Yeah, direct from the council, yes.
Right.
The letting is through the council, so I'll pay me rent to the council.
And that's lovely and secure and permanent.
It is indeed.
Okay.
There's no moving me now.
Yeah, there's no moving. So just remind people, 22 months homeless.
Yes.
And you were one of the lucky ones because you have fight in you and you're able to stand up for yourself. You were in the main in the same hotel, were you?
Oh, yeah. Because I couldn't have that moving Emily around and all, you know. It was a traumatic time. And we're right at the end of it. And I think up until this point, you don't allow yourself to feel how you feel, if you understand.
Yeah.
So you don't allow yourself to feel that emotions have been overwhelmed or upset because you're just trying to get through each day, you know what I mean? And now that it's coming to the end of it, I mean, I must have been crying loads today.
You see, I was
and
thinking...
And it's stupid because it's so happy, do you know what I mean?
It's not stupid at all because I was thinking, because I was going to ask you, how did you not crash and burn? And you had to be, as the mother, you had to be positive for Emily.
And sheer determination.
Yeah,
Ray.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if I was going to crumble, how am I supposed to allow... Like, what am I telling that child? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have to stay positive. There is light at the end of the tunnel. You will get there. For anybody else that is still in homeless accommodation, you will get there. Just hang on, do you know what I mean? And try and just keep your head straight. Because the day will come that when you're in your home, do you know what I mean? And you'll be very happy with where you're put, do you know?
Mm.
And I just tell them just to try and keep the head and you'll get there in the end. Regardless of whether, you know, you start the campaign or not, you will get there in the end, you know?
How long have you been on the housing list in Dublin City Council?
8 years or something. Yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah.
It's a very long time, but it's all coming to an end now. And, for me and Emily, I mean, it's all coming to an end. But that doesn't mean the campaign will end. The campaign won't end until the last family is housed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and Simon Coveney has promised that he's going to end all hotel accommodation for homeless people by July of this year. Do you think that's...
I know, Ray.
Achievable.
And, you know, I feel terrible saying it because he did send a nice tweet congratulating us the other night. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think that's realistic. To be honest with you, I don't think it's realistic. There isn't any places been built. There is no social housing out there. Do you know what I mean? This block of apartments that's been lying idle for over 10 years.
Well, this is why it's not just a good news story for you and Emily, but it means that something is working, because this was, my understanding is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it was a block of apartments that was built privately, commercially, and then it's been taken over by Dublin City Council, and they've brought it up to living standard, and now you're going to be living in it.
Exactly. It couldn't then pass the fire regulation or whatever that is. And then the council stepped in and bought it, and then after getting it up to scratch, you know, up to par, like, and so now the families can move in. And I have to tell you, my neighbours have actually been calling, like, coming to their homes today as well, you know, and I'm standing out on my balcony and I'm looking at them pulling up, and every time a new person pulls up, I burst into tears because I'm not just happy for myself, I'm really happy for these other families that have been put in here beside me, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And each one of them have their own stories, but they're all after being in homeless accommodation for the same amount of time, do you know what I mean? Mm. So I'm not the only one that has after been for a long period of time in a hotel with their child. The other families that have been housed here alongside me are after doing the same journey, you know, and are after having the same hardships.
How is Emily?
Oh, would you stop? I can't even. She's emotional, you know. She's an emotional child. But when I told her now, I knew she'd cry, but she was overly upset. And she kept saying, this is coming to an end. And then even when we went up to get the keys this morning, she was like, can we just go? This is all over, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It means so much to the child. It's the kids. And
51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Fiona in Waterford says, wow, listen to that conversation and how happy Eric is. Makes me realise how much I took having a home for granted. Truly delighted for her and her daughter. And what a wonderful girl. Well done. You're a credit to your daughter, says that person. And after seeing the programme on TV, I'm so delighted that Emily and her mum have eventually got her new home. Wish her much happiness from Marie. And what about the families with 3 and 4 children in hotels today? Would she campaign for them? Which she said she would. And the figures are still quite shocking and embarrassing. The figures for homelessness from February, 1,239 families. That was the number from 2 months ago. And that, the number of children there, 2,546. Just listen to Erica talking to you on the radio. What an inspiration to everyone she is, says Peter in Wexford. And what a fabulous girl Erica is. Want to wish her and Emily all the happiness in the world, Sean from Tala. And then there's offers of furniture there from a number of listeners. So we'll pass them on to Erica. 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. We'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Well, I came to Labour on the 28th of December.
Right.
Just after Christmas. I was dropped at the front door.
Of Hollow Street?
Of Hollow Street, yeah. And a nurse came down and took me up to the delivery rooms, and I was left in a sluice room for 2 hours on my own.
A sluice room is?
Well, an examination room, that's all it was.
Okay, right.
I had been forgotten about for 2 hours, and I was afraid to come out. I was in labour. I was absolutely terrified.
And was that because you were?
I thought it was because I was a married mother. I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the way I felt, and it's the way I was made to feel. So I gave birth to my beautiful little boy, and I asked to see him, and they wouldn't let me have him. He was at the end of the bed, he was still attached to me, and I asked to hold my baby, and they wouldn't let me hold him.
And when you said why?
Yeah, I begged them, please. And one nurse said, oh, look, come on, we won't tell sister here. And they just gave him to me for a minute, and then they took him away.
And was the fear that you would become attached,
yes,
or the baby would become attached to you?
Yes, I think that was the idea. But how can you not be attached to your baby? He's been inside you for 9 months.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Will is flashing up on me there. It was 1972, not the dark ages. So he's flashing up on me. So then did you actually have to bring your baby out to St. Patrick's?
Yes, I did. I had him there in the hospital for 6 days. Then they let me have him for the 6 days in the hospital, which was lovely. So on the last day, my mother came to collect me with my cousin, and we wrapped him up and I dressed him up for the day, and out we went. I can barely remember the building. I can just see the door. And knocking on the door, a nun came out and a little nurse came out. And the nun told the nurse to take the baby. So I just kissed him on the head and he was gone.
You didn't even get inside the door?
No.
You literally handed him over?
At the door. Bit of me died that day.
Yeah. But you were then, through St. Patrick's Guild, by appointment, allowed to visit him.
Yes, I did ask the nun, because the little nurse took him and she turned around and walked straight away. And I asked, could I come and visit him? And she said yes, but I had to contact the guild first before I wasn't allowed to show up at the door.
Mm.
So after a week, I went back to the village I came from. And every week I would ring up to say I'm coming up on such a day. And then I had to go out to St. Patrick's Guild, out to the Haddington Road, have an interview with this nun to see how I was getting on. Had I changed my mind? Had any circumstances changed and all this sort of stuff? And of course, circumstances hadn't changed. And no matter where I went for help, there was nothing happening.
Mm.
So my mother would come with me and we would then get an appointment to go out to the Temple Hill and I could have visit with my baby for about half an hour or so. That was it. On the last week, he was supposed to be there for 6 weeks. Now, I forgot to tell you that during my pregnancy, they told me they already had a family lined up for him. So at about the sixth week, the last week, I had a camera with me and I wanted to take some photographs. And I went up, made the appointment at St. Patrick's Guild, went out there. And when I got there, they just said, I'm sorry, he's gone. And I didn't have any photographs and I had nothing and I hadn't said goodbye to him.
That's heartbreaking, isn't it?
Mm.
And I suppose if you had got a chance to say goodbye, things might have been slightly different. It wouldn't have.
Well, it was just another.
Yeah, another kick in the stomach, really.
Yeah, exactly. Just another way of saying you weren't worth anything, your opinion was worth nothing, and your feelings aren't worth anything.
And all these years later, and you're obviously still very emotional. So I would imagine you thought about him every day then.
There wasn't a day.
Yeah.
It wasn't a morning I didn't wake up and think about him. Like first days at school, communions, confirmations, all those little milestones.
Yeah.
And I used to write to him.
Where did you put those letters?
Some of them I destroyed and some of them I hid away. And one of my other sons, who was 3 years younger than Brian, found a letter and approached me. He was about 12 at the time and asked me, did he have a brother somewhere? And I always wanted to tell them, but my husband didn't want me to. And I told him, and I asked him not to tell his other brother. And he said, oh, sorry, it's too late. We both know now.
Mm.
So from that day onwards, Brian was always in our family.
How did your husband feel about that?
He wasn't very happy about it.
No.
No, but he got used to it. It was okay then.
Yeah. So 24 years then, after you gave birth.
24 years later.
Why then did you decide to go looking for
Why then? Because I had promised him I would.
Right.
When I handed him over, I said, I will come and find you.
But it wasn't, he didn't say, I'll come and find you after 24 years.
No, but I would come and find you.
Did something happen in your life that sparked it?
No, nothing actually. Well, it just, he was 24. And he could be anywhere.
Mm.
He could have emigrated. He could have died. I didn't know. And I just wanted to know if he was okay. So I rang up the Adoption Society and asked, is there any way that I could leave a letter or is there any way that they could give me any information as to whether he was dead or alive or if he was okay? And I was fobbed off. We can't do that. We don't do that. And your name is too familiar. There'd be too many records and we don't have the records here. And I said, if there's anything you can do, just do it for me. So after about a month, nothing had come back, so I rang again. And this time I was going to be persistent. And I told the nun I was talking to that I was going to be persistent. Within a week, I had some information. He was alive, he was well, he was happy, he was well-adjusted. He was studying, he was doing his final exams. He liked to play the guitar, the other guys thought this was just great. And it was really fantastic. Hearing that was just amazing. It was like winning the lottery. It was just amazing.
Just to know that he was okay.
Just to know that he was okay.
And those little, the tiny little details.
Tiny little details. Yeah. And that he was happy and well adjusted. That was so important. And that he had a good life.
Hmm.
That was really, really important. And the really nice thing about it too was that his mother was going to tell him about the phone call when he'd finished his exams.
Uh-huh.
And if he wanted to, he would contact me.
And did he?
He did, yes. Yeah. And that was just magic.
And tell us about that first meeting.
Oh, the first meeting. After jumping through hoops with the nuns first. The first meeting, right. I was actually sitting in the same room that I was actually had the chats beforehand.
All those years,
24 years later, I was sitting there. And it was around August time, so the end of summer. And I could hear the front door opening. I could hear the steps coming up the stairs. And it's like conversation with a man's voice with the nun. And in he walked. I wouldn't have known him. I really would not have known him. And the funny thing, the first thing he said to me in his best Cork accent was, "And where are you from?" So we sat down, the nun brought us tea and we chatted away. And the first thing I wanted to do was just to apologise to him for any hurt that I might have caused. And he was, "Oh, no, 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 please don't apologise, don't apologise." And then I asked him, "Could I give him a hug?" And we hugged. And it was at that moment that I knew he was my child, because he smelled like my child. You know, you have children, their heads smell the same. He smelled like one of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just magic.
And my brother was in Temple Hill until he was 3.5 years of age, and my parents had to practically teach him to walk. He also had a number of psychological issues, says that person. And listening to that lady is breaking my heart. I'm looking for my parents as I don't know who I am. Hope she finds her parents soon. Thanks, John. And fantastic, brave women, I should say. And Nolene, for you, tell my mum, Nolene, that she is brilliant and I love her. That's kiss, 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 especially for you. It must be tough, you listening to Anne, because she's...
It is tough, yes, it is very tough.
Because it's the opposite point of view. And
completely,
there's words of, like, abandonment.
Being abandoned.
Yeah.
And abandoning somebody is just awful. You have to live with that.
But the fact that Brian is happy and he's back in your life is great. And I really hope that you find what you're looking for, you know, because it's important, isn't it? It's hugely important.
Well, it's identity, really.
It is, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's your fingerprint.
Yeah. So you've show hens.
That's right.
Show hens, right.
Yeah.
I never knew. How would you know a show hen versus a non-show hen?
I suppose, basically, all the standards, there's standards laid down for each breed of hen or duck or whatever, and they're laid down by the Poultry Club of Great Britain.
Right.
And basically, when you go to a show, the judges know these standards and the board has to adhere to those standards.
The board, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. You're there for a specific reason this evening now. What are you doing?
I'm hatching out some duck, quail and hen eggs this week. And just talking about them and the hatching process.
Did you hear about this guy, Abraham Poincheval?
No, I didn't.
Did you not?
No.
He's a French artist, right? And he has an installation, one of these art installations, and he's sitting on a dozen eggs until they hatch.
Well, I wouldn't have time to sit on the dozen eggs.
Will he? Do you think he'd be successful? Has it ever been done before?
Well, not that I know of, anyway. No. Certainly not around Cavan, anyway.
Yeah, it's not been done tonight, and that's in France.
No, definitely
that is. That's
not.
Been done in France. Well, we're really looking forward to it. It's on all this week. Big week on the farm. We're going to be talking to people every day. So Avian is the guest presenter this evening, Ruby Walsh tomorrow, then Pat Short, Al Porter, Vogue Williams. Loads of stuff like world record attempts and poetry fanciers on. So Avian, Gary, thank you very much. Barry, John Crow, thank you. Magella Coyle, thank you all.
Thank you.
See you. Bye. Yeah, so that we'll be doing that every day this week at around 4:15 or thereabouts. Loads of reaction coming in to Nolene and Anne from before, and loads of offers for Erica Fleming as well, and loads of reaction to Connor as well, and we'll get back to that tomorrow. That's it from us. John Murray's up with Drive Time. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with the new Volkswagen Golf. The most innovative Golf ever.